Yeah, but they have so much time to pump up the great coach Art Briles and Sean Oakman and all of his abs. I'm sure
Killer
that's what
Art.
they talk about for
They
after.
talk about each one of his 18 abs individually, and then they rank them in terms of spectacularness. Hunter Cook, I'm sitting here with John. Say what's up, John.
Hey there, Hunter.
And we have got a whole bunch of barrel fire hot takes about the Big 12 and college football in general. Speaking of the Big 12, it was a little bit of a weird weekend. We had Texas taking Oklahoma behind the woodshed, which was a shocker in of itself. Kansas State took TCU down to the wire, and West Virginia and Oklahoma State, they went into overtime, and then there was some basketball being played in Kansas. We don't really know what happened out there, but yeah, John, give me the rundown on this weekend.
I'll start off with that Texas game, and I'm starting to get worried about Texas. I've said pretty much the whole year that I don't like playing them the last game of the season because it almost looks like they're starting to figure out who they are. And to give them 12, 13 weeks to figure that out, that could be a problem. Charlie Strong is a really good coach, and it almost starts to look like he's starting to get things going together down there. And weird stuff happens in Austin, as everybody knows. But Oklahoma, I think, finally showed who every Tech fan thought they were. Mayfield is not good when he's under pressure. He's pretty much the anti-Patrick Mahomes, at least so far. And we'll get to that later. But Oklahoma's starting to look a little weak. If you can rattle their quarterback, which Texas was able to do, then you can actually get there. Oklahoma State continues to get lucky. A lot of people are saying they may be the 2013 Texas Tech when we went up, 7 games in a row and won, and then the bottom fell out. And hopefully that happens to Oklahoma State because they play us in a couple weeks. West Virginia continues to be unlucky. Took that game into overtime, and after the close game against Oklahoma, and then Oklahoma State was able to go into Morgantown and get a win, which is not easy, as we're probably going to find out later this week, or not this week, later this month. And then there was that Baylor game, and hopefully that's just a sign of things to come for us for next week. Maybe we can do more than 66 and less than 7 for Kansas. Kansas is not a team to overlook, but there's no reason why we can't. Slaughter, murder, do whatever we want on that football field against them in front of that impressive, impressive crowd of bleachers.
The six-man football game crowd.
I've seen bigger crowds in West Texas.
Oh, absolutely.
What did you think about the conference this week?
Man, I am terrified of Texas, and I never thought I would say that coming from a week ago. They look really, really improved. The biggest switch to me was the type of blitz package they used. They really didn't try to pressure Trayvon Boykin a whole lot, but against Mayfield, they did. Oh, man, they brought the heat. They had a couple of really good edge blitzes, but it was really, really interesting how they used their corners incredibly effectively. I'm not a huge fan of corner blitzes ever. But man, they really got there and really used some of Oklahoma's strengths against them. Oklahoma's supposed to be the blitz happy team. Eric Stryker is supposed to get to you, but he really didn't. And Texas had like 7 zillion sacks. Like, I really do think Baker, like he was on his back a lot of the time, and you know it's hard to win if you're a quarterback and you're trying to throw footballs when you have like a 25 degree angle to the ground. But all the same, I really don't think Baker Mayfield is a Heisman contender. I mean, when you look at what he's done before this, he beat up on West Virginia at home, which he had a lot of help from his defense in, and he scored like – he had one really, really good quarter against Tennessee, but the other three quarters of that game, he really wasn't that good. And you can't say someone's a Heisman contender when they're only playing well one-fourth of the time. Not a Baker Mayfield fan, obviously. I think it comes with the fandom. It's like a contractual requirement at orientation. They just kind of show you a picture of a guy wearing number 6 for Oklahoma and say, hey, if he appears on the TV, you boo no matter what. It just is a part. I must have missed it when I got in, but it is what it is. Baylor spanked Kansas. That's nothing new. Baylor does this. They're Baylor moving along. Oklahoma State is getting a little bit lucky, but at this point in Big 12, I think you would rather be lucky than good. I'm really not a fan of West Virginia's quarterback, Skylar Howard. I don't think he's very good at all. And while Oklahoma State is getting a little lucky with that, they're able to pressure Skylar Howard into some bad throws. Like Emmanuel Ogba's the real deal off the edge. And if Oklahoma State can run the ball instead of attempt to be an air raid team, I really think they could be a team to look out for. I don't think that they're a top 10. I don't even think they're a top 15, but I do think that they're a top 25. Like, that is a solid crew they have out there. And, you know, in the end, if you win enough games, people call you a good team. Bottom could fall out, but that's what happens. TCU cannot stop getting away with it. They are 2015's version of Florida State. I don't know what it is, but they just cannot lose, and they're due for one. It's going to happen at some point. I don't think they go in playing Baylor undefeated, but they're still a pretty good football team. Josh Doctson's bona fide Heisman contender. He should be up there over Boykin. Trayvon Boykin's good, but he's not. I really don't think he puts up those numbers without Josh Doctson there. So we have talked about around the Big 12. Now let's talk about our game, the 66-31 smackdown we put over the Ronald McDonald Ronald McDonald mustard stain Cyclones. Give me some thoughts on that, John.
One thing that I really liked about us, which I almost didn't like, was how we started. Other than that opening drive where we had to punt, that interception and that ensuing drive, and then from there on out, we were starting fast. I thought that was a big problem with Oklahoma, is they looked like they were not ready to play, and Texas was. And when you're a better team, you have got to be ready to play. And the biggest thing for me in that game was we came out firing, other obviously than that three and out. But we were able to jump on them early, get that early turnover. Our defense bent quite a bit in that first half. Lots of missed tackles again, which we cannot afford. But then in that second half, they scored a field goal and then a touchdown in garbage time. And that was the kind of defense that we need to see. And I know that Coach Gibbs has come out and said that he does not do any halftime adjustments, but something is changing. I don't know if it's how we're approaching our defense in the second half, if the players are just playing better, if they're playing more as a team and less as individuals, which we saw a little bit of in the first half. I know Deshaun Johnson, he overcommitted on the, I believe it was the first touchdown Iowa State had.
Yeah, he definitely did.
And he should have stayed back. And if he had, that probably would have been only about a 7 or 8 yard gain instead of what I believe was around a 20-yard touchdown. And that was on him. And I believe on the second of Warren's long run, Keenan Ward was in. And he went for a big hit kind of tackle and missed. He whiffed on it. And that led to that big run. And our safeties cannot be doing that. I do think J.J. Gaines had a fantastic game. And not just those two interceptions. I thought he played well. And in the post-game press conference, he was talking about that, how he has to learn how to play that position and know that he is the last line of defense and cannot let the other team get behind him. Of course, Mahomes did Mahomes stuff. I mean, he's like you wrote in the article that went up today. We just expect it now. If the pocket's collapsing and he's almost getting sacked, he better throw that 37-yard touchdown. I mean, that's just what he's supposed to do. He's not your prototypical quarterback. I know there's been some talk about that, about how Davis is your pocket passer. But Mahomes just makes things happen, and he did it again. And you need something like that when we have all these wide receiver injuries. It's not good to have a bunch of freshman wideouts out there, but when your quarterback can get you the ball, they're going to start to learn a little bit more. And J.D. Unhigh had that fantastic catch on that 3rd and 30. He got open and knew exactly where to go, and Mahomes knew exactly where to put the ball, like he did with the Reginald Davis touchdown, with the long bomb to Jakeem Grant. I mean, we could go on and on. We could have an hour-long podcast just on Mahomes.
Patrick Mahomes things.
And you know what? By the end of the season, maybe we will. Maybe we'll do that on our bye week. But
could happen.
I mean, lately, after the first couple games, when everyone gets excited that he does that, and then yesterday he did it, and I was like, yeah, that's Pat.
Yep.
I mean, it's unreal what he can do, and with such a little talent compared to a lot of the other quarterbacks in the Big 12, not necessarily talent, but experience.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, he's good.
He's the only quarterback in the nation where we're looking at 3rd and 30, and going through the mind of at least 60% of the people in that stadium is like, right, we got him right where we want him.
Yeah,
like this is it's okay. Like he 3rd and 10, anything over 3rd and 10 just isn't an issue. Like it really isn't. I am confident that he can pull it off. He's incredible. If I can use the, if I can actually use my college major here, he is like the Mongol horde in the 1500s invading the Islamic Caliphate. Like you just don't know what to do with him. Everything happens so fast and so quick, and all of a sudden they're surrounding you. He is speed. He is a different type of quarterback, one that we're not used to. Like most dual threat guys, they seem really, really content to push it down the field or maybe get the ball out a little quicker, take off and run. Mahomes is patient.
Yes.
A really patient dual threat guy. He'll hang back in that pocket for 9 seconds if that's what it means for someone to get open. He'll scramble around for 12 seconds if it means someone can get open. He just looks for that little opening because there's no one in the nation that can cover our receivers, even though at the end of the game we're playing with all backups. I don't know if anyone noticed that with the injury to Jakeem Grant. We did not have a single starting wide receiver in the lineup in the second half. And nope. He's still doing it. He's still pulling off these just ridiculous stuff, these stunts that are just like, how do you defend that? How do you contain him? He's going to get his points. He's going to get at least 40. The only reason he didn't put up a 50-burger on Arkansas is because Arkansas was driving for 10 minutes. He just didn't have enough time or possessions.
Right.
You can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him. Our defense, though, I didn't mind it, actually. There are a couple big runs, a couple big rips, but I think a lot of that comes with the youth at the linebacking core. A lot of youth in the secondary. I mean, J.J. Gaines and Justice Nelson being the only old guys there. I mean, we have Nigel Bethel, Tevin Madison, Paul Banks. And Paul Banks struggled a little bit at times, but towards the end, like, he got it together. And he started playing really well. I really like how Gibbs is not afraid to pull a guy if he starts playing poorly. Keaton Ward is probably the most experienced person in our secondary. And at times, in run support, he is the best person in our secondary. And it's not even close. But he missed a couple tackles and immediately he was out. And Gibbs really locked that down. And like we said, like Deshaun Johnson, he overran a couple times. And that happens. But I was really, really impressed I'm still impressed with the David Gibbs scheme. if we can get players who fit this scheme and get the type of guys that we need on campus. I mean, when we get Pipkins from Michigan, if we can keep him, if we can hold him together, and Colin Hill, the guy from Notre Dame, we get them on the field. We get them on the field next year with Fajoco and rotate in the like freaking eight true freshmen that we just recruited on the defensive line. I think we might see a little bit of a change. Obviously, we'll miss Pete Robertson, but ipso facto, it happens. I really do think that this is a scheme that's going to stop a lot of people in the Big 12. We're just so stinking young, and it's their sixth game running this. And yeah, we did give up the touchdown in garbage time, but if we can hold someone to 31 points, we're going to win the game.
Oh, definitely. With the way our offense plays, yes.
Yes, it's over. You can't hope to stop it, especially when we start getting all those guys back from being injured and banged up a little bit. Get Lauderdale back, get a lot of that edge blocking back. A guy we never talk about, DeAndre Washington, is going to be a threat. He is a problem for people. I was really impressed with the run game too.
Yeah, and that that long run that DeAndre had, I think that's the one that put us up, I want to say 31-14. That looked like the turning point of the game. Before then, Iowa State kind of still looked in it. But at that point, you could really tell they were starting to really feel like they weren't in it anymore. And that's what we need to do to these teams, Iowa State and Kansas, is take them out of the game early. Show that we are the better team, the front runner for the Big 12 title right now. Am I right?
Yep, front runner for the national. Put us in the playoffs right now. But if you let us have the playoffs at the Jones, that takes way too hot. That's way too hot of a take. There's no way. I can't believe I was even thinking that. But you know, weird things happen in Lubbock.
That's right.
We have got Kansas coming up next week. And oh my gosh, poor Kansas. There is not a football program in the rest of the nation that has had the absolute terrible luck Kansas has. I'm not even going to segue and ask you a question. We're just going to talk about Kansas because it just sucks. They weren't very good anyways. They're on their like third or fourth string quarterback. They lost something like 80% of their offensive and defensive production to injuries and transfers in the offseason. And now they're losing more people. I feel so bad. I really do feel awful because, I mean, it wasn't like – it was in 2008, I believe, when Kansas is, you know, winning the Orange Bowl over Virginia Tech with Todd Reesing. And, you know, Kansas and Missouri was actually a little bit of a big deal. What the freak happened there? Like the wheels just fell off the bus real quick.
And I don't know. I don't know if the recruiting just wasn't there, but usually when you have a good season, you can start to recruit a lot better. But I think I read at the beginning of the season that Kansas was like 15 or 20 players below the maximum for scholarships.
Good Lord.
if this was correct, they don't even have the amount of players that they can have. So players aren't wanting to go to Lawrence. And looking at the crowd this week, why would you want to go there? Other than pretty much assured playing time, because any four-star freshman is probably going to be the starter there a true freshman.
And I mean, like you, I don't even know if we can attribute, I don't even think the crowd's going to be that big next week.
No.
I'm pretty sure there's a good like 30-40% of them that showed up so they can say they saw Baylor. Because Baylor's probably going to be a playoff team.
Right.
It's legit. I mean, I don't see how anyone can argue against that at this point. Like, they've dismantled whoever they've played, and they have the meat of their schedule coming up, which shouts out to the Big 12 for screwing us every single year. And for giving the perennial powers pretty easy route, pretty easy schedule. Baylor's about to get into the meat of their schedule, and we'll start to find out what kind of a team there are. But when you look at it, I mean, besides like a couple holes in the secondary, which they are looking – they kind of are plugging them adequately, that's a team without any weaknesses. It really is crazy.
Yeah. And I know last week we talked a little bit about Sean Oakman, but I don't know if you were able to catch it. But Oakman had a couple of really bad plays against Kansas.
Ugh. I mean, I didn't catch it, but it wouldn't surprise me. Wally rolling around out there.
I mean, he rushed the quarterback, and he was a good 3 or 4 yards away from him when he threw it, and he just laid him out. And that is not something that you want from a senior defensive end.
Mm-hmm. Did you draw a penalty on that, or did
They gave him the 15.
Ugh. I blame the absence of the crop top. I think people get lost staring into the 18 abs that he has, and that was probably a reason why he was such a good pass rusher. But I don't know either. I'm trying to think, and I really don't like bagging on one guy, but I really cannot think of anyone in recent history who has been that overrated. Besides probably their monster tight end. That guy looks like a demon Build-A-Bear. Like, good Lord, he is huge. And he's had one touchdown catch this entire year, and it was against Kansas.
Right.
And if you watched our game, Baylor likes that little tight end pop pass where it's going to the tight end every single time. Like, he's going straight up the field. It's a streak, and they hit him about 15 yards. Baylor hit that on us about 3 or 4 times. He wasn't even in the game. I don't know. It just seems like everyone's hyping up the players for Baylor that don't do a whole lot. It's a weird thing.
It's publicity. When you're a school like Baylor, who up until a few years ago was a UNT, you need something to get the people to the game, because outside of Waco 5 years ago, nobody knew who Baylor was. And you have to use something to get people to buy your jerseys and go to your games in Kansas. Other than alumni who are going to make a road trip, nobody wants to go see a nobody. And then you have to play well, and you need the publicity. And a lot of that started with Griffin. He was a fantastic player to watch, but he was also – he had the crowd appeal. And that's what started to get Baylor a little bit more notoriety. And maybe Mahomes is going to start to do that with Tech.
I do. If Patrick Mahomes does not at least get like a consideration or a couple of pity votes, it is an absolute travesty. Like, I know we haven't played like the best defenses. I know that like we're getting a zillion possessions a game. But when you look at what he's done, and I mean, the stats by themselves are staggering. But the stats don't tell the whole story with Patrick Mahomes. Like, we could talk about this forever. Like, if Jakeem Grant was over down in Abilene and Patrick Mahomes was in Lubbock and you had three defensive linemen chasing him, he could probably complete the pass. I really don't think that's an exaggeration, because he's so dang elusive. Doesn't he look like he's trying? That's the cool part. It looks like he just sits on the sideline listening to his headphones. He's probably listening to Freakonomics or something. He takes them off, runs in the game, skirts around for a little bit, throws a deep ball, and just kind of walks off and goes back to playing, you know, a game of spades on the sideline with Cliff. Like, he's not even trying. He just is.
Right. And I think the thing that makes Pat so good is his complete awareness.
Yes.
I know when he is in the pocket, when he's not rushing around, he goes through his reads excellently. It's perfect. He can go through them quick. He can almost, it seems like, see into the future. He knows where the guys are going to be, and they trust him enough to go to where he knows they're going to be. And then when he is running around, it's like he has multiple eyes. He's looking at that defensive lineman. He's just an inch out of reach of that guy who's trying to sack him. Meanwhile, he's looking downfield to see exactly where he needs to drop that ball in. And then he runs around a little bit, gets a couple yards, and then launches that bomb. and it falls exactly where it needs to be. And the touch is there, which I know the announcers are or were talking about a little bit yesterday. They were pretty impressed with that. But he just knows exactly where he needs to be. He knows where the receivers are going to be, and he knows exactly where that ball is going to go and where it needs to be. And it's all this season, it's been perfect. Mm-hmm. And I know that the one stat that has been annoying me is they've said that he has been sacked once. And I had to go back and look and found that it was a conference game in Lubbock, which the only one before yesterday was TCU. And so I went through the drives and found one drive in the third quarter where it said he was sacked at like the TCU 3, but there was a personal foul. And so the play was null and void. So in my mind, he's never been sacked this year.
Fair. That's a very fair point. I want to switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about the Tech defense a little bit. In particular, Pete Robertson. I know we didn't talk about this before, so I'm kind of throwing you a curveball here. But even though Pete has not been making the production that he had last year, I would actually at this point argue that he, through six games, he is having a better season than he did last year. He so much of being a defensive lineman, especially in the defense that we have, is not about getting stats. You can't really tell how good someone is by their stats, especially like sacks. You have to look at something like hurries. You have to look at pressure. You have to look about whether they're doing their job or not. And as of right now, I have not seen Pete Robertson out of position, blown off the ball, or completely stonewalled in a pass rush yet this season. Like, he has always at least put on a little bit of pressure. He is the only person on our team that has not been whipped. He's leading the team with five tackles for loss, which isn't a whole lot in the big scheme of things. He only has one sack. But going back and looking at Iowa State again, both of Gary Moore's sacks were caused by Pete Robertson getting pressure and flushing Sam Richardson. He's been absolutely in a defense where we don't have a lot to smile about. If we're completely honest with ourselves, besides turnovers, we don't have much to hang our hat on right now. Pete Robertson has been an absolute standout. And if he was anywhere else in the country, he'd be getting a lot more recognition than he is now. He's just a phenomenal player. He brings it every single week.
Right. And the thing with this defense is on the defensive line, you don't want to notice those guys. The more you notice them is when you have plays where they're missing tackles.
Absolutely.
When Rika and Fajoko are in the front line getting that tackle, stopping the guys at the line, you don't notice them that much. But when a guy is blowing past them and they're whiffing, they're grabbing at air, that's when you start to notice those linemen. And the same goes for Pete. I know last year we blitzed almost every single play, it seemed like, and that was probably what got him those stats and got him that recognition. But now he's more your stay-at-home kind of rusher. He's not trying to get to the quarterback right away all the time. And I remember one play yesterday where I think it was Warren who ran by, and Pete had probably one of the best form tackles I've seen from one of our defenders in a long time. He was able to get an arm around the waist and use his other arm to grab around the legs, and he stopped the guy immediately. And it was just a good tackle. Something that we've been missing a little bit in this defense. But you're right. And in this year where we've given up a lot of yards and a lot of points, definitely a lot more than we wanted to, Pete has been that guy who's been able to be there and stand out. And he's a leader.
Yeah. And he's not the only guy playing well. I mean, shout out to Micah Alway, who is a pretty consistent guy. Like, I love the way he plays. He doesn't always have the most talent, and I don't think that's a knock on him at all. But he plays his butt off, and that's great. Dakota Allen. Is Dakota Allen a sophomore or a freshman?
Redshirt freshman, I think.
Maybe. I mean, dude, if he's either a redshirt freshman or a redshirt sophomore, we either have him for two or three more years, and he's just going to get better. Leading the team in tackles. Tackles are a useless stat, but still, I'll use it because it bolsters my argument. Dakota Allen's going to be really good in a couple years. Tevin Madison, going to be really good in a couple years. Is pretty good now, but will be even better. Nigel Bethel, still a sophomore. It's such a young, young defense. We're starting a true freshman from day one at defensive tackle, probably one of the most important parts of the defense in terms of run defense.
Right.
I mean, we're still young. We've been young for 3 years. I don't know how it's happened, but we're just young. And he's been – and Pete's been just a – like a pillar that everyone else can lean on. Like he is the foundation. Like everything can be crumbling around him, and Pete's still playing well. He is still galvanizing everyone. I'd love to see more eye black. I think if he went back to, you know, maybe if he just like spray paints his face in chrome, he'll have a 4-sack game. It's entirely possible, but I don't know. He's played a heck of a year, and it sucks because he's not going to get the recognition that he deserves because he's playing for Texas Tech.
Yeah.
Same with Patrick Mahomes. It sucks, right. but it's true. I mean, that's the stigma about Tech. That they have a good offense every year. Oh, their defense is bad. Well, you got to watch it. You got to actually watch them play and see, like, holy crap, they have some guys who can really ball and even if they win other places, would be balling there too.
Right, and the guy I've been most impressed with this year is Jashawn Johnson.
Absolutely.
He played a few games at corner last year before he I believe he separated his shoulder. And it was some kind of injury where it required season-ending surgery. And then he comes in this year and Gibbs is like, oh, you're not playing corner, you're playing safety. And oh, by the way, you're starting. And so we have basically a freshman out there as one of our starting safeties. And he's been great. He doesn't have the size that you normally see on safety, but he has the heart and he's fast. He's been the closest thing that we've had since Dwayne Slay to one of your hard hitting safeties.
And he's really young too.
Yeah, he's just a freshman.
Freaking young. And we just got confirmation from the Eye in the Sky Ryan that Dakota Allen is in fact a freshman. So 3 more years, fam, we out here.
Awesome.
It's going to be good.
Awesome.
Oh man. Well, I am all fresh out of things to talk about. I'm about to go watch the Dallas Cowboys probably get crushed by the Patriots because I'm a glutton for punishment. But hey, man, at least we have something to hang our hats on, and that is that the Texas Tech Red Raiders are 4-2. We have equaled our win total from last year.
That's right.
And we have possibly the worst team in FBS, so we're probably going to beat it. And we're going to beat our win total from last year. And, man, like, we look good. I know, like, we kind of compete with Staking the Plains at times, but I read something the other day by Travis Hale. I love Travis. He's a good guy.
Yes, he is. He
interacts a lot on Twitter. And he wrote something about how it was in the water. And even though, like, we lost a couple games and we lost one bad game against Baylor, Texas Tech football is enjoyable to watch again.
Yes, it is.
And I cannot agree more with that statement. It is just – it's bearable. You can watch it, and, you know, we're comfortable at the end of games now. It's the best feeling in the world, and I really think we're on our way back. I think we're going to be enforced in the Big 12.
Yeah. I've got one thing before we go. Now that we're at the half point of the season, what do you realistically think our ending record is this year?
I think that we go 8-5. I really do think that West Virginia is kind of reeling right now. I think Oklahoma is reeling a bit. I think Texas provided the blueprint to beat them. Playing Oklahoma State at home is a very, very good place to play them. Obviously, we have Kansas. Oh, who else in the Big 12 do we have left to play? Kansas State.
Kansas State.
That's terrifying.
Luckily, that game is in Lubbock. However, I believe that is game 11 straight for us. The bye week gods were not favorable to us this year at all.
Once again, shouts out to the Big 12. That's 4 years in a row, you chumps. Come on, give us a bye week. Give us a bye week, please. Yeah. But yeah, we have a lot of really, really tough games coming up. But honestly, if our defense can – if we can put together a full game on defense, not a half game, if we can play like we do in the second half all the time, and if we can get, maybe if we can get 75% out of Patrick Mahomes and maybe get a couple receivers back, I see no reason why we don't go 8-5. We go to a solid bowl game and we absolutely blow out whoever we're playing in that bowl game because no one else in the nation sees offenses like they do in the Big 12 consistently.
No.
What about you? What's your take?
I'm going to go one higher than that. I think we go 9-4 with a big bowl win. I'm afraid of Texas. I'll admit it. And I don't think we're going to get the win in Norman. Because it's just tough to play there. I like our chances against Oklahoma State and Kansas State, both in Lubbock. But I don't think that we escape both of those very easily. So, but then if my math is correct, that would put us at 8-5. So 8-5 or 9-4 with a big bowl win. I saw that the SB Nation college football account today put out the bowl predictions and projections, and it had us playing in the Heart of Dallas Bowl at the Glorious Cotton Bowl against Marshall.
Oh, we trashed them. Sorry. If there are fans listening to this podcast, I'm sorry. I'm really not trying to trash your team, but at this point, it wouldn't even be a contest.
And that is the Big 12 7 Bowl. And plus, that counts Baylor going to the playoff, which means we're really the eighth best team in the Big 12, mm-hmm. which means everyone other than Kansas and Iowa State is going to a bowl in this conference.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Also, like, Iowa State, I don't think they're as bad as a lot of people say they are. I think they get a couple upsets. Like, it's going to happen. I mean, look at who they lost to. Iowa apparently is not a slouch for, like, the jillionth time in Kirk Ferentz's up-and-down career. and they lost to a pretty good Toledo team in double overtime in Toledo. I mean, it's not good, but it's not bad either. Like, I really do think that they're a good team, and I think we prove what we can do against a pretty good team.
Yeah. I'll agree with that.
All right. Well, that is it. Pray for the Cowboys or don't, if that's your thing. Either way, it's going to be fun. So, and we will see you next week with a breakdown of Kansas and just about everything else. All right. See you, John.
All right. Take it easy, Hunter.